We are joined in studio by Noel Rock, former Fine Gael TD for Dublin North West. Noel, thanks for coming in. You've got a piece today in the Sunday Times. It's under the headline, and I know you don't write the headline, so we'll sort of take that as a given. Politics needs young outsiders. I'll be back. We'll talk about whether a former TD can ever be considered an outsider in a few minutes' time. But first of all, it is now 7 months since you lost your seat in the general election. How have the last 7 months been?
It's hard to believe, isn't it? 7 months since the general election. It feels like a relatively short time ago. But, you know, in my own life, like with anything, COVID has kind of changed everything, I suppose. So the months between March and June, I suppose, simultaneously flew by yet crawled by. So it's been a very strange time. And I know I didn't write the headline, obviously, but I suppose, you know, going into politics, I would have been an outsider. If you consider that I would have grown up in a single parent household in Ballymun, not your traditional Fine Gael stronghold necessarily. That would have made me quite a bit different, I think, to other TDs and to other people in the party, and given me a different perspective on things. And now, once again, post-politics, I'm once again on the outside, if you like, looking inwards. And that's a pretty peculiar experience, because this government's very, very different, I suppose, to the one that I was in.
Indeed. Not to put too fine a point on it, but obviously after the general election, you pursued election to the Shannon, and then COVID happened in the meantime. So the ability to even canvass in the Shannon election kind of went out the window.
That's right. Yeah, Gavin. So it's more or less 6 months today, if I'm not mistaken, since we got the order to stop canvassing in the Shannon election. So today being September 13th, I think. I think we're told on March 13th or 14th, you know, you can't be travelling around the country meeting 250 councillors in different counties anymore because of the lockdown, which is about to come in. So that was, it's a bit of a blow, I suppose, because naturally, if you're competing in an election, you have to talk to and canvass everybody on that electoral trail. And if you can't canvass half of the people, well, that severely diminishes your chances and your prospects. So it's kind of strange how my political, if you like, demise, if you want to put it that way, kind of correlates and works side by side with the advent of COVID. The events are kind of very much wrapped up in each other. So yeah, it's hard to believe it's been 7 months.
Obviously it makes looking for a job subsequently sort of tricky, but people would say that sure, you were a TD, you're on a fine wage, and when the time comes you'll get a decent pension. But in fact, I was talking to you earlier on, and actually the arrangements that you get, you know, a TD earns a nice wage, but it's not as if you're sort of riding a gilded lily afterwards.
No, it's actually it's really strange, and most people wouldn't know it. Like, you pay PRSI, but it's a strange class of PRSI. It's completely unique to politicians, so you're not actually eligible for any benefits, be it dental, medical, or unemployment benefit. So you pay about $4,000 a year in PRSI, but you actually, when you look at what benefits are listed under, it's literally, it's nil, it's nothing. So that's kind of peculiar in and of itself. Obviously, being a 32-year-old unemployed during a pandemic, it's kind of, it's a tricky one, all right, to try and engineer job prospects and another career. And to be totally honest with you, I think I read The Independent last week, about 1/6 of graduates right now are able to find jobs. That's kind of the situation where I am right now as
It does put everything into some context. You've written in today's piece that you've written in the Sunday Times that you are the youngest person who can claim the title of former TD since Myra Barry retired age 30 in 1987. You weren't even born in 1987,
That's
were you?
That's right, yeah. When Myra retired from politics age 30, I was yet to be born. So I'm the youngest in my own lifetime former TD, which, again, you know, normally when people get into politics, normally if they get elected at a young age, they have a seat for life, right? Normally it's in a constituency where they're very safe. So in my case, it's unusual that I won a very marginal seat at a very young age. And accordingly, that's why you produce this unusual statistic that I'm the youngest former TD in my lifetime. But it just means that, like, you know, without COVID, it'd be an opportunity for reinvention to a certain extent. Maybe you can reinvent yourself as an analyst or a pundit or a journalist or whatever. But obviously COVID kind of strips away those opportunities when you consider you're trying to create and cultivate a new career and a new job at a time when there are no jobs, at a time when the state sees fit to effectively double the unemployment benefit because there's an acknowledgement that a lot of jobs are on hold. That's it's tricky.
At what point did you really know that your seat couldn't be retrieved? I know that there was obviously difficulties where part of your constituency was redrawn. In fact, you yourself no longer lived in the constituency, I think, after the redrawing, because some of the seats... you have to move house to move back into your constituency.
You don't have to, but like, if I'd lost by a margin of one and I didn't live in my own constituency and couldn't vote for myself, it would have been quite annoying, to say the least. And I'd always be a big believer, Gavin, in the idea that you really should live in the constituency that you seek to represent, because, you know, you go out your front door in the morning, you see the problems quite literally, and you get to see the people.
But all of that being said, though, at what point, even after having lost a lot of those votes because of the constituency boundaries, so it was a bit of an uphill battle, and as you said, it was a marginal seat to begin with, but at what point in your own mind did you know that this seat was going to be nearly impossible to hang on to?
You know, I think it was the moment in the weeks leading up to the election when I heard about the prospect of commemorating the RSC, or the Black and Tans, where Fine Gael were being associated with wanting a state commemoration for that. I could feel the votes ebbing away from me with each phone call from each person that I would have known.
How does that translate on the ground? Like, does a TD like yourself, do they actually get feedback from people who are complaining about something that someone else in the party is doing?
Yeah, all the time. You get feedback on all manner of things. And even still, I get feedback on things. Like, people stop me to talk about Golfgate and so on, even though, like, at that stage, I'd been 6 months a former TD. Mm. But, like, a lot of people simply don't know that you've lost your seat. So they still think that you're a TD, and they still stop you accordingly and tell you about the broken footpath and what have you. But before, when I was actually a TD, people were stopping me and ringing me constantly about this RIC issue. And they were kind of people I would have known, Gavin, if you know what I mean. So I would have known their politics, if you like, and I would have known they were fairly middle-of-the-road prospective Noel voters, but prospective, not, you know, people who I might lose. Mm. And sure enough, they were quite angered by the whole thing. And they're quite angered even by the handling of it, where it was officially never cancelled. It was just postponed, of course. Mm. And again, that didn't really butter any parsnips with a lot of those folks. So for me, I could feel that was the moment where things were starting to slip away.
I'm sure you wouldn't say that it was only that one instance, though, that there was probably an accumulation of things and that there were some things before and after that.
It just spoke to a bigger issue that we weren't necessarily, even with the initial backlash, people weren't necessarily hearing the feedback correctly, I suppose, within the party. And again, like, I mean, I remember the state pension issue was a big issue during the campaign as well, the prospect of raising the state pension age from 66 to 67. Again, it ran on and on and on throughout the election. And just little things like that, well, they're not little things at all, things like that start to accumulate, and they start to make you feel as though the votes are ebbing away. And you could see that then. Of course, we have a Sunday Business Post poll today, which you talked about. Mm. It's not much fun for me to look at those kind of polls.
No, because if you're a prospective Dublin candidate and you're looking at Fianna Fáil being at 4% in the capital and Fine Gael are somewhere in the 30s.
Yeah, it's sort of like being transferred away from Liverpool the week before they win the title or something like that, you know? You know, I could see the Business Post poll, I think it was 19% after that RIC incident. And you knew on 19%, it just wasn't a runner. Because you get to know these numbers kind of intimately to a certain extent, and you kind of know what works and what doesn't.
Well, then, if there is this accumulation or this snowballing of other things where the party seems like it's allowing things to be put off, or that it might be tone deaf, then was it a failure of party leadership not to just act conclusively to try and put them away, to, you know, that they could have just said, we're cancelling the RIC commemorations, or you could have come out with the new pension policy on day one and just put the whole thing to bed? Why weren't those things put to bed? Why were things allowed to ebb on and to bleed away the way that they were?
No, I don't blame the leadership of the party or anything like that. I think, you know, they were trying to put together an honest manifesto within the context of the amount of money that they thought they would have. Mm. But like all of these maths and pretty much everything has been completely upended, of course, by the COVID pandemic. So, I mean, accordingly, like all these conversations about things that happened before the election kind of feel somewhat prehistoric, I suppose, to a certain extent. I think they tried to react to them in a realistic way without completely tearing up their own manifesto. So it was kind of the honest way of doing it. But I suppose the central kind of point that I'm trying to make today is that I think politics does need more perspectives, needs people from the outside. Mm. I think it still needs more young people. Obviously, I've been in and out of politics, and I'm 32 now, but yet I'd still be the youngest Fine Gael TD if I was still there. Simon Harris is now the youngest Fine Gael TD. He was the youngest Fine Gael TD in 2011. So, like, you know,
he's 33.
Yeah, I think so. 33 or maybe a few months older than me. But like, that speaks to something, I think, to a certain extent. And while people and organizations like Women for Election have done great work in highlighting the gender aspect of underrepresentation, and that's a very true and very real problem, there's also an issue about the types of people that we elect as well, in terms of perspective, in terms of class, and in terms of age as well. So there's a real issue, I think, about diversity in our parliamentary politics.
Is that what you mean by outsider? Because there'll be a lot of people who read this and they'll think that, look, at whether people have sympathy with a defeated TD because, you know, you go in, you ride the wave, you know that your job position is always going to be volatile, the electorate had their say, you can't argue with it, and so be it. But there'd be plenty of people who'd say that, you know, calling yourself an outsider having already been a TD, and before you were a TD, you were someone else's parliamentary assistant, and you worked in Leinster House, and you were also a Dublin City Councillor. Mm. You wouldn't strike many people's definitions as being an outsider.
Yeah, but I think an outsider is a perspective, I suppose, more than anything else, and an outsider is informed by background, I think, more than anything else. So if you look at my experience compared to the experiences of others, if you look at the fact that, you know, I would have went to a Desh school, for example, if you look at the fact that I would have grown up in the flats in Ballymun, for example, raised by a single mother, these things inform perspective, and these things are what make, I believe, someone an outsider in effect, and make them somewhat different from the other people in there. Just because you're inside the room doesn't necessarily make you an insider. It's the perspective that informs that.
But is there any value to having someone with your perspectives in there if, as you said, you realised that the RIC thing was going to snowball and become a liability, that you were going to lose votes and seats over it, if you knew that the pension thing was dragging on and that it hadn't been concluded and that you were going to lose votes and seats over it, and your warnings weren't listened to, then what's really the value of having a perspective like yours in there?
Well, precisely. That's why I say we need more outsiders. I think if there'd been more of an accumulation of people with those outside perspectives, then we might have been able to have a critical mass of people who would have been able to make these points. But having maybe one outsider in there isn't simply enough alone.
Do you need more Noels?
I'm not going to say that. And certainly you mentioned the word sympathy as well. Like, I mean, this piece isn't designed to elicit sympathy or look for sympathy. It's designed to provide, I suppose, an analysis and a realistic perspective of A, what it's like for a former politician. Because I think there's a little bit of, I know from speaking to former colleagues and I know from speaking to other former TDs and former councillors, a little bit of shame in talking about the perspective, about how far you fall in effect.
Because you look like you're trying to curry sympathy.
No, I want to just give, I want to give the inside view, I suppose, on how this worked and what this looks like and what it's like 7 months on. Mm. But I don't want sympathy necessarily. I just want to give a straight analysis of what it's like.
As an outsider, what do you think of how things have gone for the last 3 months or so since the new government took office?
It's tricky. I mean, it's always trickier to be in there and making these decisions and you understand the nature of the compromise and what have you. But it's not being communicated very clearly. I think anybody could say that. Anybody I talk to every day would say that.
Whose fault is that?
You know, issues around, for example, the reopening of the pubs, needing a €9, you know, food limit, tracking and tracing receipts in effect, etc., etc. It's a difficult start. It's been a difficult birth to the government. You can only hope they find their feet. Because, I mean, remember, Gavin, I'm talking as a former politician and I'm talking as a person without a job and I'm talking as a private citizen. And I suppose I need this government to succeed and to do well so that the country doesn't go belly up, not from a political point of view, but actually from a professional point of view. And I know there are thousands of people listening to this right now who feel the exact same. They may not like Fine Gael, Fianna Fáil or the Green Party, but they actually kind of need the government to do well in order for the country to do well. And I suppose in that respect, I wish them the very best.
The headline says that I may be back. Will you be back?
Never say never. It'd be silly of me to rule out a return to politics at age 32. The one thing I've learned over 7 months is that I very much loved what I did. I very much enjoyed what I did. From a personal fulfillment perspective, I'm not sure anything will give me the same amount of joy. So there's a large part of me that's saying I'd love to go back, but that may not be possible. And that's okay as well.
Noel Rock, thanks very much for coming in to talk to us this lunchtime and On the Record. Appreciate you being so frank about things.